بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. What we can cover tonight is probably Battle of Uhud, and I hope we could go up to the Banu Nadir. And I have forgotten to bring my Quran with me, so.
Yes.
I don't think you need sample questions. Just about these major events that we have covered, and main concepts about, say, for example, the first revelation and these issues. Otherwise, I don't think sample questions would be necessary. So, if I can take a Quran, thank you so much. Now, of course, both the Battle of Uhud and Battle of Banu Nadir, we can trace it in the Quran, and almost the main features of the story are mentioned in the Quran, of course, with the style that Quran has, mentioning the story to take lessons from it, not just for the sake of the story. Now, the Battle of Uhud, the incentives for this battle, maybe. You remember I said that there was a Ghazwa to Sawiq, where Abu Sufyan wanted to come back and take some sort of revenge to fulfill his pledge that he had with himself. And in that, he killed two of the Muslims of Medina and set fire on some palm trees and went back. Now, probably in retaliation to that, Prophet sent Zayd ibn Haritha to As-Sariya to take the caravan coming from Mecca on Iraq route. As I said last week, after the Badr, the caravans didn't come from this side of the coastal type of area, which was the usual route for Syria. Now they changed course, they went the longer way through the Iraq path to Syria. Now, of course, Prophet everywhere had his people looking around, knowing what time Quraysh is coming, what time they would camp where. So he sent Zayd ibn Haritha to this caravan to somehow take revenge or retaliate against the Ghazwa to Sawiq. And in that retaliation, of course, the whole caravan was confiscated, which had about 100,000 dirham worth of property. And of course, Abu Sufyan was leading the caravan. He fled back to Mecca. Now, this whole incident gave the idea that it is impossible to live like this, because our route to Syria is cut off. Also, the sense of revenge was very high in Mecca, because the 70 people who were killed in the Battle of Badr were not ordinary people. They were all prominent nobility of Mecca. And there is a very interesting story about a man who had lost a son, because after the news came in and after the initial mourning and grief, the leaders in Mecca, like Abu Sufyan and others, they said no one has the right to grieve until and unless we take our revenge from people of Medina. So crying was forbidden in Mecca for the deceased, for those killed in the battle. Now, there's an interesting story about this old man who had lost a son and some other relatives. He could not cry for them because, of course, it was a disgrace breaking that law. And one night he heard a woman was crying, and he sent his servant to find out whether the regulation is changed, now they can cry, so that he could cry for his son as well. And the servant went and came back and said, no, this woman has lost her camel, and that's why she's crying. And then he composed a long poetry, which is written in Ibn Hisham, very beautiful, that how strange, women can cry for their camels, we cannot cry for our sons. And this poetry actually encouraged the people of Mecca again to go for revenge. Now, of course, at that time, financing a battle was the most important issue as this time. Of course, now we have regular armies, we have government budget for them. At that time, it was even more difficult because there were no regular armies. If an army wanted to go out, the rich people of the city or of the community should have put lots of money in so that a battle could take place. Now, what they did, when the caravan came from Badr intact, they decided, after hearing the news of the battle, they decided not to touch the property in the caravan and use all the money to muster a big force to go back to Medina and to take revenge. So the money was huge. They had big finance, and they tried to win support of some other tribes around Mecca, and they mustered a force of 3,000 soldiers. That was huge, of course. To the scales of that time, before the conquest of Mecca, of course, the conquest of Mecca broke all those rules, because in conquest of Mecca, Prophet brought 10,000 soldiers. Yes, please.
Did they think that they lost the first of the so many people? What made them think they were going to win the second time?
Well, they probably thought that they were not organized in battle, they were not prepared for it, they had not gone really for battle, they just had gone to show off and come back. I mean, many other things that people like these mushrikun of Mecca would think. I mean, if you want to ask this question during the whole history, you have to ask the same question about all the tyrants, why they think they would live, despite all other tyrants have won in one way or another, have been uprooted. Anyhow, I mean, as the Quran says, they had lost their senses, lost their minds. And among these 3,000 soldiers, they had 700 fully armored, because armor was very, very expensive at that time. Not every man had armor, those iron dresses and these things. So 700 of them, 3,000 camels, 200 horses, quite, and women, interestingly. Why they took women? Because women like Hind, wife of Abu Sufyan, who had lost her father, her uncle, her brother, they were the greatest force for propaganda, for actually encouraging the soldiers to go to battle. So they took 15 women like Hind, and believe me, they were enough for a full army to be encouraged to go to battle. And as you probably have seen even in the film, the women were the ones who actually encouraged their men to go back to the battle again. They were grateful. And poets like Abu Izzah, who was captured in Badr, and Prophet released him, freed him without any ransom, on the condition that he never composes any poetry against him or against the Quran. And he promised. And now he has come back in Uhud. And the poor man, of course, was killed in Uhud. He came back to Uhud to encourage the army for the battle. Now, of course, the news was shocking for Medina, because they were not that much prepared for such huge battles. And, well, many people thought that even the first battle in Badr, they just had won by chance. It was chance, it was maybe miscalculation of the enemy, maybe different situation and circumstances that brought all that victory for the Muslims. So, of course, as soon as the Prophet received the news, he said that Abbas himself, the uncle of the Prophet, wrote a letter to the Prophet, informed him that this huge army is coming up. And Prophet was in Quba when he received the letter, and he just opened it and read it and went for Medina, and everyone asked him, what has happened? He said, khair inshallah, nothing. He did not divulge, of course, the news. Prophet was very, very secretive with regards to wars and battles. He never divulged any information which was not necessary. And here as well, in Uhud, when he received the news, he didn't tell anyone. Of course, I told you, anything in the history about Abbas, uncle of the Prophet, we are suspicious about it, because later Banu Abbas tried to somehow cleanse the shirk of Abbas for those many years. And anything against Abu Talib, of course, is again suspicious, because Banu Umayyah wanted to attribute all evils to Ali and whoever was attributed to Ali. Peace be on him. Now, Prophet went to Medina. You remember I said every Saturday Prophet used to come to Quba and do Salatul Zuhr and go back. So probably it was one of those events which Prophet was in Quba. He went to Medina, he gathered his companions, he started to consult about the strategy of defense. And of course he sent some people to verify whether really this huge army is coming or not. And yes, the news unfortunately was right. And the army was coming. So, the overall atmosphere in Medina was that we have won that battle, we can win this one as well. So, everyone was very much encouraged by the previous victory, and they were in mood of war. However, more experienced people like Abdullah ibn Ubayy, although he was a hypocrite, but he was experienced in battle. So they were of the opinion that we don't move out of Medina. The younger ones, those who were more passionate, they said, no, we don't fight in our city. We go out and we fight outside Medina. Now, of course, later on, when prophets return in retrospect, I mean, when they look at the battle, people related to Abdullah ibn Ubayy, the hypocrite, blamed the Prophet accepting that type of advice. However, I mean, we can see that initially it was not a mistake in the strategy, because initially the Muslimun won the battle. It was just disobedience of the commander, disobedience from the command of the commander that made the whole event to turn. And Muslims were defeated. So the strategy was not wrong that the Prophet assumed and accepted that they move outside Medina. Now, of course, the argument of people like Abdullah ibn Ubayy was that when we are inside Medina, they have to come into these very narrow streets and alleys, and we can kill them by stone. Even our women can fight. When we go outside Medina, we need lots of armors, lots of weapons, and that war will be very, very difficult for us with little number that we have. And he was right, in a sense. I mean, the strategy was not wrong. However, the strategy that the Prophet assumed was right as well, and it proved to be right, because initially the Muslims won the battle. It was just a mistake by the soldiers that made everything to go wrong. Now, okay, Prophet mustered 1,000 men. And you can imagine, these were probably the whole people in Medina who could really fight and take a sword. For example, one of the people who didn't go was Jabir ibn Abdullah Ansari, because he was very young. Prophet did not allow him to go. Otherwise, anyone above that age, Prophet took with him, and there were only 1,000 men, including the men of Abdullah ibn Ubayy, the Munafiqun. However, in the middle of the way, of course, Abdullah ibn Ubayy, he didn't have any incentive to fight such a battle, an unequal battle. So he deserted with his 300 men, and they went back to Medina. Of course, this was always a concern for the Prophet when he left Medina, leaving Medina with hypocrites and Munafiqun. What would happen there? Yes.
In the first battle in Badr, they only had 300 people. Where did you get the other 700 from? Because it was just a very short period.
In the first battle, they really didn't go out for battle. They just went to confiscate the caravan. So people were not mobilized all inside the Medina. However, of course, now it was a real battle, so they knew that they were going for a real battle. And of course, when we come to the conquest of Mecca, now all tribes around Medina were Muslims, and Prophet could muster a very big force from them. Now, of course, the battle itself is explained in the Quran. However, before going to the battle, just some idea about how Muslims were passionate and eager for martyrdom in such battles. Especially after they had seen that some people were martyred in Badr. Now they were really, really eager to get martyrdom for themselves. We can also measure this by what has come in Nahjul Balagha from Amirul Mu'mineen, that he says, Prophet, you promised me in Uhud when some people were martyred, and I was not martyred, and I was very, very grieved for that reason. You promised me that I would become a martyr, but still I haven't become a martyr. It shows that, of course, they when they went to the battle, they were really eager for martyrdom. Of course, except a few. Now, you remember Amr ibn al-Jamuh? Anyone remembers we talked about Amr ibn al-Jamuh and his idol and how people ridiculed him and his idol, and eventually he just dumped his idol and converted to Islam. He became a very, very stringent Muslim, actually. He was an old man. He had four sons, and he was handicapped as well. He was paralyzed or crippled. He couldn't walk properly. So in Uhud, of course, he wanted to go out. And Prophet told him, you shouldn't come. You have no decency to come with us. And his wife insisted, why you go? You cannot fight. And he said, who says I cannot fight? They started quarreling. Who says I cannot fight? I can fight better than other men. And the wife said, you have four sons there. Why you want to go? He said, well, you want me to leave Shahada for my sons, and I don't say Shahada. I'm not going to listen to you. Anyhow, eventually they went to the Prophet, and Prophet told his sons and his wife, if he wants to come, why you want to stop him? And he went. Now, in the battle, of course, when he went to the battle, probably he was thinking that because he was handicapped, he wouldn't get to the really forefront of the battle, he wouldn't get Shahada. So he made a dua, Allahumma la taruddani ila ahli. My Lord, do not return to my family. Well, you might say because he had a quarrel with his wife before going, but it was not for that reason, certainly. It was because he didn't want to come back alive. So he made this dua, and he went to the battle, and incidentally he managed to kill some of the mushrikun, and he was killed himself. Now, why I mention this in example? Because he was the cause of the creation of the graveyard in Uhud that we go now. Because people wanted to take their people back to Medina, their martyrs back to Medina. And he lost a son, also a brother-in-law, and himself. All were martyrs. And when his wife came to take them, put them on a camel, and she wanted to take them back to Medina, the camel didn't go. She took the camel for a while, and the camel returned to the place. And the Prophet was amazed as well. And Prophet said, did he make any dua before going out for battle? The wife said, yes, she made this dua, Allahumma la taruddani ila ahli. Prophet said, this is why. God has accepted his dua. He doesn't want him to come back to Medina. So let's bury all the martyrs here. And this is how that graveyard was created in Uhud. Otherwise, of course, it didn't make sense why they buried the dead there, not taking them back to Medina to properly have proper funerals and these things for them. The other person, a young one now, this was an old man, of course, with that passion of war. The young man, Hanzalah, Ghasil al-Malaika, Hanzalah ibn Amir. Now, he had married just the night before Uhud. And, of course, Prophet had moved in the afternoon towards Uhud. And he consulted the Prophet. Prophet said, you have just married today. You better stay tonight. Don't come with us. But in the morning, even before making ghusl, he just set out to Uhud. And he made a very, very, of course, brave battle, and he was killed. Now, Prophet saw a very strange thing. Prophet saw that the angels in that vision of the Prophet are actually giving ghusl to this person. And he was amazed. He said, what has happened? Probably this man hasn't made ghusl before coming, because it was the night of his marriage before coming to the battle. And they said yes, actually the relatives said yes, very, very quickly in the dark morning he came out to reach the battle in Uhud. And of course his son Abdullah ibn Hanzala was one of the commanders of Mukhtar, taking revenge of Imam Hussein from Ubaydullah and others. The boy which was actually conceived that night was Abdullah ibn Hanzala, which later on became that very brave man. Now, when the battle started, usually, as you know, the standard in the battle at those times was the sign of resistance. If the standard in the battle, of course they had different types of standards, banners or something like that, usually it was a long type of strip of cloth or anything which was carried by a person, and sometimes they had some sort of pictures or writing on them. In Uhud, the Prophet's standard, he had two standards. One was given to Ali, peace be on him, and there was a picture of an eagle on it. Now, here, of course, we don't know what the standard of Mushrikun was, but very, very brave men were given these standards, and it was very difficult to bring them down. Now, Talha ibn Abi Talha, who was one of the bravest men of Mecca, was carrying the standard, and no one dared to get close to him. Now, the first thing that happened, Ali, peace be on him, attacked Talha, he killed him. The second person took the standard, until all the historians mention that 9 people in the army of Mushrikun were killed all by Ali to bring down that standard. And of course, they were keeping it off, one after another, until a woman took it, and Ali just returned. And the battle, of course, started. A very fierce battle. And in the matter of an hour, probably, the Mushrikun were defeated. A very, very bad defeat. And they, of course, had that memory of the Battle of Badr as well. And the initial defeat was something which completely ruined their morale. So they started to retreat. And those women shouting at them, go back, they did not listen. And they retreated. And the Muslims, of course, went after them for probably a kilometer or so. And they came back to gather the booties. Lots of booties of war were there. And Muslimun had not given lots of martyrs or many casualties. So they started to take the booties. Now, there was that very strategic place beside the mountain, a valley beside the mountain, that Prophet had actually put 60 soldiers, 60 archers there, so that those horsemen from Mecca could not come round and ambush them from behind. Now, these men who were commanded by Abdullah ibn Jubayr, Prophet had told them, if all of us are killed, or if all Mushrikun are killed, if we go until Mecca, anything happens, you do not move from here. And of course, it was a very, very wise strategy that Prophet took. However, these Muslims, as soon as they saw that people are gathering the booties, they said, now these booties are going to be finished. They are going to be collected by those in the battlefield, and we would remain without any booty. So they started to come down. And Abdullah ibn Jubayr, of course, he shouted at them, he swore at them, stay, Prophet has told us to stay. They didn't listen. They said, well, what use? The Mushrikun have gone. There's no Mushrikun anymore. They are defeated. And they came down. And of course, the horsemen who were waiting, you have seen the film. It was Khalid ibn Walid coming from behind. As soon as they came from behind, suddenly they saw that the Mushrikun saw that the Muslimun are turning back fighting, they came back as well, so they put, somehow they pressed the Muslims in between. And this was of course the beginning of defeats. Now, the defeat was very appalling, in the sense that almost every Muslim took big wounds in that battle. And what was worse is that people did not care about the Prophet. They started, as soon as they saw that they are being defeated, they just ran away. And in the heat of the battle, something else happened. Prophet was wounded. Prophet was wounded very severely in Uhud, from in his face, on his shoulders. And when Ali, peace be on him, and Abu Dujana were bringing the Prophet back, there was something like a well or something, and Prophet fell into that. And they took the Prophet. It was as they are taking the dead Prophet to carry. And then suddenly the rumors went that Prophet is dead. Now, the rumors about Prophet's death, of course, was the end of the battle, because it was more devastating than the standard or the fall of the standard or something like that. So the Muslims started to retreat. And the Prophet was shouting at them, but they said, where is the Prophet? Who is this man shouting? And this famous statement of the Prophet, أَنَا النَّبِيُّ لَا كَذِبْ, I am the Prophet, come back. But no one listened. They said, no, Prophet is dead. This is, someone is calling on his behalf. And they started to go back. Even those who saw the Prophet, because the battle was so fierce, they ran away as well. Now, Mus'ab ibn Umayr, you remember him, of course, the young man sent to Medina. He very fiercely defended the Prophet and he was killed. And he was very, very similar to the Prophet, they say, in his appearance. And if someone hadn't seen the Prophet before and had seen him just once and seen Mus'ab ibn Umayr, they actually were mistaken by the similarity. Now, the man Ibn Qama'a, who came and shouted that I killed the Prophet, when the rumor went Prophet is killed, then someone came back from the battle and said, I killed the Prophet personally. I know Prophet is killed, so do not listen if they say Prophet is alive. And this man actually had killed Mus'ab ibn Umayr. And he attacked the Prophet. He wrote a very, very severe wound to Prophet's shoulder. But of course, Ali ibn Abi Talib drove him back. And he went as well and said that Prophet is dead. So everything was confused. Now, also Hamza, of course you know this story, Hamza was killed by Wahshi, and the Muslims were set on flight, and some of them, they started to move up the mountains, some started to go towards Medina. And I said last week, Uthman and Zayd ibn Haritha, they fled to the other side of Medina, to a mountain called Ja'lab. And when Prophet came back to Medina, he told them, لَقَدْ ذَهَبْتُمْ فِيهَا عَرِيدًا, you went a long way to hide. You needed to go that long way. And Umar ibn al-Khattab and Talha, they also ran away. They stood just behind the army, just watching. And then Anas ibn Nadr was rushing, probably had taken someone back, rushing back to the battle, and he told them, why are you standing here? Why don't you go? They said, Prophet is killed. He said, so what's the worth of life after the Prophet? Why are you standing here? Come, the God of Prophet is alive. And he went, of course, Anas ibn Nadr was marching. Then Talha, of course, came back. Talha came back, and Abu Dujana, Sahl ibn Hunayf, these people started to come back. But the man who never left Prophet, of course, you know, all historians have said it was Ali. And Ali took 90 wounds. And 90 wounds, 16 of which were very, very deep wounds. Just enough for a person to be killed by them. And Ali himself says that, I fell 4 times and I thought that I'm dead. And then a nice man came to me and took me my hand and said, stand Ali, stand and fight. And then when I mentioned that to the Prophet said he was Jibreel helping you actually in the battle. So the whole hopes of Ali was being evaporated actually by seeing that Prophet was wounded in that. There, Prophet had taken many, many wounds in his body, 2 very severe wounds in his head. So there was the fear that Prophet might die at any moment. So very difficult moment for Ali. Umar says that Ali came back to us while he was fighting. I saw that his eyes were fully red. And he wanted to kill us. He said, I have to kill you before killing these mushrikun because you are worse than them. You have left the Prophet alone and you have come here. And I was really afraid. And later on Umar said, whenever I remember Ali in that mood, I'm really shaken. Because I really thought Ali is going to kill me. And I just explained to him, no, we have come back to go forth again. And he just left, Ali left. And there was no time for argument actually. And then later on Abu Dujana came and Sahl ibn Hunayf came, Asim ibn Thabit came, and they protected the Prophet and took him up the mountain. Now, all historians mention, and Ibn Abi al-Hadith says, I have heard this hadith from several of my shuyukh, that Ali fought until his sword was broken. And of course he just dropped the sword, and Prophet gave him Zulfaqar, because Zulfaqar was the sword of the Prophet. And said, Ali, fight with this. And Ali started to fight, and then they say that there was a voice coming in the atmosphere. La fata illa Ali, la taifa illa Zulfaqar. There's no manly character person like Ali, and no sword like Zulfaqar. And Zulfaqar was probably a very special sword, because I mean, in such battles, many swords usually broke. But this one, Ali had it up to the end of his fights and battles in Safin. And it did not, it did not break. And, seeing that event, Jibreel came to the Prophet and told to him about Ali, إِنَّ هَذِهِ لَهِيَ الْمُوَاسَةِ. This is the problem, the sacrifice. And this is one of the occasions that Prophet said, أَنَا مِنْهُ وَهُوَ مِنِّي, or أَنَا مِنْ عَلِي وَعَلِي مِنِّي. We are one soul. That's why Ali is fighting like that for me. And other stories. Women. Of course, women did not take part in the battle. But there was a woman called Nasiba Umm Umara. She had 2 sons who had sent to the battle. And hearing that she had brought some water with her to probably cure the wounded and also give to the soldiers. And when his son was martyred, he took his sword, went to the battlefield, and killed the murderer, the one who killed his son, her son. And then, of course, people came to kill her. Someone was rushing, running away from the battle. And Prophet told him, because this Nasiba as well was helping to protect the Prophet. And although Prophet was fighting himself, but all the attack was on the Prophet actually. Everyone wanted to come and kill the Prophet. They didn't pay any attention to anywhere else. And that's why everyone had to be around the Prophet. And the man was running away, and Prophet told him, drop your shield and go to hell. Because there was no shield there. And when he dropped the shield, and he gave the shield to Nasiba and said, protect yourself by this. And there is a hadith mentioned by Ibn Abi al-Hadith, لَمَقَامُ نَسِيبَ الْيَوْمْ أَفْضَلْ مِنْ مَقَامِ فُلَانٍ وَفُلَانٍ. The position of Nasiba today is higher than such and such person. Ibn Abi al-Hadith says, I wish the person who reported this hadith would have mentioned who were these Fulan and Fulan. Because probably these Fulan and Fulan later on became prominent politicians or prominent people. The Rawi could not mention their names. Otherwise, of course, there was no harm mentioning their names if they were ordinary companions. And he says, I wish that he was brave enough to mention the name. Now, when Nasiba was fighting that hard, Prophet, of course, told her that you have done your duty, you go back. She just said, Prophet, pray for us, that Allah make us your companion in paradise. And Prophet made this dua, Allahumma aj'alhum rufaqai fil jannah. Make this woman and his children my companions in paradise. And as soon as she heard that, she said, now I'm relieved. Whatever happened, it doesn't matter. And of course, it's not mentioned whether she was martyred or not. Now, the story of the battle is mentioned in Surah Al-Imran. This is a very, very interesting story. I mean, as I said, the stories mentioned in Quran are just to give some lessons rather than mentioning the whole story. That's why you find it scattered from verse 121 to 175 with very many verses coming in between talking about different issues as well. Now, let's just look at the verses which deal with the battle. And probably we can learn more than what is what could be found in books of history. Because, you know, the books of history, for many reasons, they haven't reported lots of things. But here you can find it. Now, verse number 121, وَإِذْ غَدَوْتَ مِنْ أَهْلِكَ تُبَوُّؤُ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ مَقَاعِدَ لِلْقِتَالِ. When you came out of the city and you started to position your people for battle. وَاللَّهُ سَمِيعٌ عَلِيمٌ. And Allah is all hearing, all knowing. إِذْ حَمَّتْ طَائِفَتَانِ مِنْكُمْ أَنْ تَفْشَلَ. When two groups of you wanted to desert. وَاللَّهُ وَلِيُّهُمَا. And although Allah is their wali. So, when he says وَاللَّهُ وَلِيُّهُمَا, the exegetes say that this means this is not Abdullah ibn Ubayy al-Munafiqun. Because of course, Allah is not the Waliyu al-Munafiqin, he's Waliyu al-Mu'minin. So there were two groups of Mu'minin who wanted to desert because of the fear of the battle. وَعَلَى اللَّهِ فَلْيَتَوَكَّلِ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ. Of course, these Mu'minun should have relied on God and they should have remembered وَلَقَدْ نَصَرَكُمُ اللَّهُ بِبَدْرٍ وَأَنْتُمْ أَذِلَّهُ. Allah helped you in bad, and you were you had much less power, you were very, very little people. فَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ لَعَلَّكُمْ تَشْكُرُونَ. And then talks about malaika and other issues. Now, it's very interesting that the verses here mention that there was a sort of doubt that creeped into the heart of Mu'minun because of the defeat. I mean, you put yourself in place of those as companions of the Prophet. That you are fighting beside the Prophet, and suddenly you see Prophet all drenched in blood, and you think that he's killed, and then you are defeated, and you say, was he really a Prophet? If he was a prophet, why was he defeated? And therefore, apart from the defeat, there was not only psychological, there was a theological crisis there as well. And these are all the things that Quran mentions here, actually. Now, you can see in verse number 140, إِنْ يَمْسَسْكُمْ قَرْحٌ, if a wound came to you, فَقَدْ مَسَّ الْقَوْمَ قَرْحٌ مِثْلُهُ. A wound came to these people like that, of course, before in Badr, yes.
Sheikh, how can it be a defeat? Because the Medinans were not vanquished. At the end of the day, each side went home. Surely it was a draw.
No, it was not a draw. The number of mu'minun who were killed were enormous. And, of course, they did not expect that these Meccans could somehow make them retreat. They thought that just as in Badr, we can very easily, although they have great numbers, we can defeat them, but this was not the attitude of everyone still. Because some of them, seeing the number, they just wanted to go back. They were frightened. So now you say it wasn't a defeat. But if you were in that battlefield, it was really a defeat. I mean, seeing the Prophet in that situation, retreating, going back on the mountain, it was really a defeat.
But the Muslims came to destroy the Muslims, and they didn't succeed, they went back.
Now, of course, that's a different issue. That was not something they were thinking about at that moment. In a way, people were just thinking about themselves, not about Medina, not about the Prophet. And this is what Ali Imran mentioned, that you وَتَائِفَةٌ قَدْ أَهَمَّتْهُمْ أَنفُسُهُمْ. A group of you only thought of themselves. They didn't think about anything else. As you say now, that they didn't think that Medina is saved. And of course, they thought that these mushrikun are not going to give up. They are going to come to Medina as well, as they did want to come. We'll discuss about that later on. So if a wound came to you, the same wound came to those people, and وَتَلْكَ الْأَيَّامُ نُدَاوِلُهَا بَيْنَ النَّاسِ. And this is, these defeats, victories, these are different attitudes, different situations that we exchange between people, so that we realize the truth of the faith, we realize who is mu'min, who is not mu'min. وَلَيُمَحِّصَ اللَّهُ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا. So that Allah purifies the heart of the believers, taking out all those things which is for dunya, and purely make it for Allah. وَيَمْحَقَ الْكَافِرِينَ. And of course, أَمْ حَسِبْتُمْ أَن تَدْخُلُوا الْجَنَّةَ وَلَمَّا يَعْلَمِ اللَّهُ الَّذِينَ جَاهَدُوا مِنْكُمْ وَيَعْلَمَ الصَّابِرِينَ. Do you think we let you to go into paradise before we know who is really a mujahid and a sabir and who is not? And a very, of course, rebuking verse. وَلَقَدْ كُنْتُمْ تَمَنَّوْنَ الْمَوْتَ مِنْ قَبْلِ أَن تَلْقَوْا. Before you go to battle, you say, oh God, give us martyrdom. We want to be martyrs and these things. فَقَدْ رَأَيْتُمُوهُ. Now you saw it. So, what did you do? This is a big test. And of course, this test is always there. It's there for us, it's there for others. It was there for the companions of the Prophet. You were wishing, you were desiring for death before this. Now you saw it, and you were watching other people dying in front of your eyes, and then you started to flee. وَمَا مُحَمَّدٌ إِلَّا رَسُولٌ. Muhammad is just a messenger. Are you mu'minun because of Muhammad, or are you mu'minun because of Allah? قَدْ خَلَتْ مِنْ قَبْلِهِ الرُّسُلُ. Before him there were prophets as well. أَفَإِنْ مَاتَ أَوْ قُتِلَ انْقَلَبْتُمْ عَلَىٰ أَعْقَابِكُمْ. If he died or he is killed, do you turn back on your feet? And if you turn back on your feet, you are not going to, of course, harm Allah in any way. And then, of course, other verses about how prophets were steadfast and how there were some people fighting on their side. And then the question, and this theological crisis. The theological crisis was, in a way, fueled by another thing that Prophet had told them before, that you will win this battle as well, the same way you won Badr. And when they were defeated, of course, the question was more critical now. The Prophet told us we win. Now we have lost. Now we are defeated. وَلَقَدْ صَدَقَكُمُ اللَّهُ وَعَدَهُ إِذْ تَحُسُّونَهُمْ بِإِذْنِ. Of course, Allah fulfilled his promise that Prophet gave you, that you will win the battle. You don't remember how you were just bringing them down like leaves of trees very easily? حَتَّى إِذَا فَشَلْتُمْ وَتَنَازَعْتُمْ فِي الْأَمْرِ وَأَسَيْتُمْ مِنْ بَعْدِ مَا أَرَاكُمْ مَا تُحِبُّونَ. Until you deserted, you started to quarrel about the booty and disobeyed after God showed you what you like, the booties of war. Then, of course, the promise was not that Allah would support you if you go for the booty. Allah would support you if you go for Allah. And therefore, it was withdrawn. مِنْكُمْ مَنْ يُرِيدُ الدُّنْيَا وَمِنْكُمْ مَنْ يُرِيدُ الْآخِرَةَ. Some of you want dunya, some of you want akhirah. And, of course, they are not equal. Now, This is, of course, not to addressed to Munafiqun. This is addressed to the companions of the Prophet. And if Quran talks in this vein about the companions of the Prophet, why couldn't we speak like that about the companions of the Prophet? Well, some of them were after dunya, and they were really after dunya. And they showed that after the demise of the Prophet, how they were after dunya, and how they actually violate all the standards of iman because of dunya. And some of them, of course, were really, really after akhirah, as the Quran mentions. مِنْكُمْ مَنْ يُرِيدُ الدُّنْيَا وَمِنْكُمْ مَنْ يُرِيدُ الْآخِرَةِ ثُمَّ صَرَفَكُمْ عَنْهُمْ لِيَبْتَلِيَكُمْ. Then, of course, after you went for the booty, Allah turned you away from the victory to test you, or to, again, examine your heart. وَلَقَدْ عَفَىٰ عَنْكُمْ. Allah has forgiven you now for what you did. And this shows the very heartbreaking scene of the battle. إِذْ تُسْعَدُونَ وَلَا تَلْوُونَ عَلَىٰ أَحَدٍ. When you were moving, climbing up the mountain, you did not look back. You did not think about anyone else in the battle. وَالرَّسُولُ يَدْعُوكُمْ فِي أُخْرَاكُمْ. And Prophet was shouting, calling you, go back, and you did not go. Now, of course, this is real reproach and rebuke for the companions of the Prophet. You even did not listen to the Prophet because you saw the death that you wished before that. فَأَصَابَكُمْ غَمًّا بِغَمٍّ لَكَيْ لَا تَحْزَنُوا عَلَى مَا فَاتَكُمْ وَلَا مَا أَصَابَكُمْ. Then, of course, other types of heart attitude came to you. You forgot about that. And we have forgotten you about all these things. إِنَّ الَّذِينَ. Now this is again very interesting. إِنَّ الَّذِينَ تَوَلَّوْا مِنْكُمْ يَوْمَ الْتَقَى الْجَمْعَانِ إِنَّمَا اسْتَزَلَّهُمُ الشَّيْطَانُ بِبَعْضِ مَا كَسَبُوا. Those of you who turned away the day when the two groups met, that's the day of Uhud, Shaitan has made them slip because of some of those things. So, if these things tests come, it shows, when these tests come, when we are put in such a situation, of course, if we have a sinful past, we would somehow slip. We cannot stand. Sir. If our hearts are pure, if our actions are pure, then we can stand fast. And this is how we saw about some of the companions, how they helped the Prophet and defended the Prophet. And then, of course, وَمَا أَصَابَكُمْ يَوْمَ الْتَقَى الْجَمْعَانِ فَبِإِذْنِ اللَّهِ. What afflicted you on the day of meeting with the mushrikun, it was all with the permission of God. وَلِيَعْلَمَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ. So that God would know who is real mu'min. وَلِيَعْلَمَ الَّذِينَ نَافَقُوا. And also know those who have hypocrisy in their hearts. And then, of course, this very, very famous verse, وَلَا تَحْسَبَنَّ الَّذِينَ قُتِلُوا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ أَمْوَاتًا بَلْ أَحْيَاءٌ عِنْدَ رَبِّهِمْ يُرْزَقُونَ. Do not think those who are killed in the way of Allah, they are dead, they are alive, they are being sustained by their Lord. Now, okay. This was about what happened in the battle. Now, after the battle. After the battle, when people saw, of course, when Prophet was taken up the mountain and people saw how he was, and he was hit by a big stone in his forehead and by a big stone in his neck, so that some chains of his armor had gone into his neck and it was very difficult to bring it out and blood was everywhere. And when they brought it out, actually two of his teeth fell, and already some of his teeth were broken as well. So a very, very dreadful type of scene that the Muslims saw of the Prophet. And they started to say, Prophet, curse them. And this very, very famous sentence of the Prophet, which is mentioned in most of the histories, that he said, Allahumma ahdi qawmi fa innahum la ya'lamun. My Lord, guide my people because they do not know. But these people, they, even when they wanted to leave, they did lots of gruesome acts to the dead bodies of the martyrs. First of all, they mutilated everyone except Hanzala. I don't know why Hanzala was not mutilated. Maybe someone had some relation with him and he did not allow Hanzala to be mutilated. And mutilation was like this, that Musla, they cut the nose, they cut the ears. And they gave a very, very gruesome type of picture of the deceased, so that when the relatives came and they saw, they were really, they were more grieved than just seeing someone is martyred. And this is what they did to Hamza as well, and it made Prophet really, really upset. And, well, apart from that, they had cut Hamza's stomach open, and, I mean, those gruesome things that they had done. And, it's interesting, the man who killed Hamza, Wahshi, he ran away. Of course, you can imagine how Prophet was grieved by that incident. He ran away to Mecca. When Mecca was conquered, he went to Taif. When Taif was conquered, he didn't have anywhere to go. So he just thought, what should I do? And someone told him, you have to confess Islam to the Prophet before they can find you. Because if you confess Islam, then everything is forgiven and Prophet cannot do anything to you. So he went to Medina under disguise. And he went to the mosque, and when Prophet came to the mosque, suddenly he took his veil and he said, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah. And they said, who are you? He said, I'm Hamza. Prophet, realizing that he was Hamza, of course, he said, I'm a Muslim now. And realizing that, he said, how did you kill my uncle? Because, of course, no one could get close to Hamza. He was very, very strong. And he explained, and Prophet cried. And Prophet said, just do one favor to me. Never come in front of my eyes, because I really cannot see you. I don't kill you because you have become Muslim. Just never come in front of my eyes. And this is what he did. He always, of course, kept distance from the Prophet. And then he migrated to Sham. Of course, you can imagine what type of life would wait for such people. He migrated to Sham, and he used to drink alcohol very much, and he was actually given had several times for that. And at the end, they had to take his name from the list of the Muslims who were given stipend, and at the end he died because of that excess of consumption of alcohol. Anyhow, this was, of course, the habit of the Prophet, how he dealt with anyone who became a Muslim. Now, the news of Prophet's death, because for probably a couple of hours everyone thought that Prophet is dead, and people just fled, and they came to Medina, and they said Prophet is dead. Now, you can imagine what happened in Medina, people hearing that Prophet was dead. And Fatima, daughter of the Prophet, and Hind, wife of Amr ibn Jamuh, they rushed to the battlefield. Because, of course, if Prophet was dead, you can imagine how Fatima would have felt. And when they came to the battlefield, this Hind, the wife of Amr ibn Jamuh, they told her, your husband is dead. He said, how about the Prophet? They told her, your son is dead. She said, what about the Prophet? And when they told her, Prophet is alive, she said, Alhamdulillah, this is what I want. I don't care about anyone else but the Prophet. And, of course, Fatima seeing the Prophet in that very grave situation, she started to cry and draw some straws and put on the on Prophet's wounds. Now, after Prophet seeing the mutilation of the martyrs, he was so angry, especially seeing Hamza in that situation, that he thought of revenge. Said that if I have some sort of power, I take revenge, I would do the same thing. Now, in this occasion, these verses from Surah Nahl, the last verses of Surah Nahl was revealed. وَإِنْ عَاقَبْتُمْ فَعَاقِبُوا بِمِثْلِ مَا عُوقِبْتُمْ بِهِ وَلَئِنْ صَبَرْتُمْ لَهُوَ خَيْرٌ لِلصَّابِرِينَ وَاصْبِرْ وَمَا صَبْرُكَ إِلَّا بِاللَّهِ. And if you take your turn, then retaliate with the like of that with which you were afflicted. That means you are permitted to retaliate if you want. But if you are patient, it will certainly be best for those who are patient. And be patient, and your patience is not but by the assistance of Allah, and grieve not for them, means for the mushrikun of course, and do not distress yourself at what they plan. Surely Allah is with those who are muttaqi and those who do good. And upon the revelation of these verses, the Prophet said, I will keep patient and I never take revenge of such things. Now altogether, 70 of the mu'minun were martyred in Uhud, and 22 or 28 of the mushrikun were killed in the battle. And of course, the main bulk of these were killed just at the first attack when they were defeated and they were going back. And one very interesting thing, these bodies who were mutilated, they were buried there, as I said, because Amr ibn Jamu's camel didn't go to Medina, so they decided to bury everyone there, and they buried sometimes two bodies or three bodies in one grave. Now, at the time of Muawiyah, about 36 years later, there was they wanted to dig a canal to bring water just from beside the grave. And they told them it is possible that some of these graves are exposed. And they called people of Medina, they said whoever is relative of these people come, and they can take the remains to Medina and bury them there. And four or five of these graves were exposed. And people saw that the bodies were fresh there in the grave. The bodies of four or five, of course the names are mentioned, I don't remember the names of those people. One of them is Asim ibn Thabit, who was steadfast with the Prophet, and few others, and you can imagine all of them, all the bodies should be fresh there, these people who are martyred in Uhud. But four or five names are mentioned in the history in that instance of digging the canal, that their bodies were fresh, and they of course reburied them in the same place. Now, other incidents of year 3, the Battle of Hamra al-Asad. Now, this Battle of Hamra al-Asad took place the next day, and this is very interesting. The next day after Uhud, it took place. And the reason was that the fear that Mushrikun might come back to take Medina. I mean, it was silly. They defeated the army of Muslimun, and they didn't go to take Medina. And this was because they were fearful. Abu Sufyan was a very cautious person. And even in that battlefield, they were arguing among themselves, should we go and take Medina, shouldn't we go? Abu Sufyan said, no, there should be something there. It's a bit dodgy. Why? I mean, they were defeated so easily. So we just have taken our revenge, we go back. And this, of course, is supported by the fact that Abu Sufyan, when Prophet was on the mountain, Abu Sufyan came down and said, Muhammad, one day for one day, Uhud for Badr. And if you want to retaliate, then of course we have other days as well. And they went back, but in the middle of the way, they thought, how stupid we are, why didn't we go to take Medina? And of course, Prophet was aware of this, that these people might come back. So, the first thing he did, he sent Ali to see where these people will camp. And they went and they camped in Rawha, about 72 kilometers outside Medina. Now, you can imagine Ali with those wounds, how did he ride a horse? How did he go there? How did he come back? Why Prophet did not send anyone else? Well, because everyone was wounded. Everyone who could be trusted. Of course, some of the companions did not take any wounds, but Prophet didn't like to take them or to tell them to do anything. So, with lots and lots of difficulties, Ali went and brought the news that they are there. Now, Prophet, of course, was by revelation. He was told that you have to go after these people. Now, of course, you can imagine an army of about 600, 700 wounded people. What can they do? Of course, they couldn't do anything. If they met again, they would have been defeated again. However, Prophet just wanted to spare them. So, on the night, the caller called that whoever believes in Prophet should prepare to go to battle. And all those wounded people, the poor people, who some of them were really on the verge of death, they started to prepare to go out. It said that there were two brothers, both wounded, but one of them were wounded more than the others, and he could not walk. And they didn't have any camel or any horse, they were foot soldiers. And because of the order of the Prophet, the one who was wounded less took the other one on his shoulder, and they went with the Prophet. And you can imagine, these people couldn't fight really. It was just the idea of scaring the people. And the Prophet went 12 kilometers outside Medina and camped in Hamra'ul Asad. And that's why this is called the Battle of Hamra'ul Asad. And these people are commended in Ali Imran again. In verses number 172 onward, الَّذِينَ اسْتَجَابُوا لِلَّهِ وَلِلْرَسُولِ, those who responded positively to Allah and to the Prophet, مِنْ بَعْدِ مَا أَصَابَهُمُ الْقَارِحِ, after they had taken wounds, لِلَّذِينَ أَحْسَنُوا مِنْهُمْ وَاتَّقَوْا أَجْرٌ عَظِيمٌ, for those who did good and were pious, there will be big reward. Now you might say, why Allah always specify لِلَّذِينَ أَحْسَنُوا مِنْهُمْ وَاتَّقَوْا, because of course you don't know how events might turn tomorrow, and a person who's commended here now, what might become of him or her tomorrow. And that's what Allah always specifies, that if they have this criterion, of course. الَّذِينَ قَالَ لَهُمُ النَّاسُ إِنَّ النَّاسَ قَدْ جَمَعُوا لَكُمْ فَخْشَوْهُمْ, those to whom people said, people have gathered to fight you, so fear them. فَزَادَهُمْ إِيمَانًا, they only increased faith. وَقَالُوا حَسْبُنَا اللَّهُ وَنِعْمَ الْوَكِيلُ, and they said, God is sufficient for us, and He is the best of the one on whom we can rely. فَانْقَلَبُوا بِنِعْمَةٍ مِنَ اللَّهِ وَفَازُوا, they returned with the ni'mah of Allah and a faz. Of course, that was not a financial type of ni'mah and faz, it was a spiritual. لَمْ يَمْسَسْهُمْ سُوءٌ, no harm came to them. وَاتَّبَعُوا رِضْوَانَ اللَّهِ وَاللَّهُ ذُو فَضْلٍ عَظِيمٍ, and the following was, إِنَّمَا ذَلِكُمُ الشَّيْطَانُ يُخَوِّفُ أَوْلِيَاهُ, only shaitan frightens his friends about the other army. Now what happened? Prophet went to Hamra'ul Asad and camp. Now there were a group of people coming from Mecca going to Medina for some business. Abu Sufyan saw them. They had decided to go back. They had made the consultation and they say, we have to go back and take Medina. Now he told them, when you go to Medina, tell Muhammad that we are coming. Be prepared for a battle, and we are coming with food. And the whole idea was just to scare the people inside Medina so that they might move out. Now, these people came and they brought the news to the Prophet. And that's why the verses, الَّذِينَ قَالَ لَهُمُ النَّاسِ إِنَّ النَّاسَ قَدْ جَمَعُوا لَكُمْ, when they were told by people that people have mustered force against you, فَخْشَوْهُمْ, so be on your guard, fear them. And but these people just increased in their faith. Now, from this side, what Prophet did, of course there were about 500, 600 wounded people, Prophet said during the night, he camped there for 3 nights, and he said every night you set fires in different places of the plain, 500 fires at once, so that if anyone sees from above or from far away, they think that we are 100,000 people gathered here. And of course, you can imagine in a plain of desert, 500 big fires, people think that around every fire there should be about 20 men, so this is a 10,000 army. And the news went to Abu Sufyan that a huge army is coming after you. So, of course, the Muslims were defeated at the beginning. Now, Prophet has mustered lots of force from Medina, and they have come after you. And someone as well Ma'bad al-Khuzai. He was a mushrik, but he liked the Prophet. And he respected the Prophet, but he was a mushrik. When he passed by, Prophet told him that, where are you going? He said, I'm going towards Mecca. He said, give my message to Abu Sufyan that we are going after him. And again, Prophet wanted to scare them as well. So he went, he knew what the situation was. He knew that these people are all wounded people. They are not people who can fight. But when he went to Abu Sufyan, he was a poet. He said, you know, if I were you, I would have just fled tonight. I wouldn't have stopped even 1 minute. Because if you stay 1 minute, you can hear the hooves of the horses who are coming. And he said, even when I was coming, I thought of I composed a poem about their strength, and the poem is there. Very, very beautiful poem about the strength of the army coming. And Abu Sufyan, upon hearing that, the same night, he said, we go. And they just fled and went back. And of course, the Mu'minun went back to Medina. So the question that why these kuffar didn't go and take Medina, in the first place, they thought that it's dangerous. When they thought and analyzed later on, they said we can go back, and then of course this tactic of the Prophet that they think that we are going after them rather than waiting for them to come, changed the whole situation. Now, other incidents of the year 3, we have Sariya of Abu Salama. And this Sariya, in this Sariya, of course, Abu Salama passed away, or he was martyred, not because of the fight in this battle, because he was wounded in Uhud. And when he went to the journey and came back, the wound was sore, and he passed away. And of course, her wife was Ummu Salama, who married the Prophet later on. Now, the disease in Uhud emboldened all the tribes around Medina. So most of them, they thought that why shouldn't we go and plunder Medina or take some sort of make an attack to Medina, probably we could end Prophet. And also one other thing, people were very much they desired very much to take captives from Muslims and take them to Mecca, because Meccans bought Muslim captives with a very high price. And this is why we would see that there were two very, very grave incidents later on that happened, that Mushrikun wanted to take Muslims to Mecca and sell them. Now, they were emboldened. They started to gather force to one of them, Banu Asad. They started to gather force and to attack Medina. And the Prophet, of course, became aware of that. He sent Abu Salama. And they went to their place, they fought them, they defeated them, and they went back. However, of course, Abu Salama passed away when he came to Medina. Also, in Ramadan of this year, year 3, Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba was born. The first child of Amir al-Mu'min and Fatima, peace be upon them. And of course, in year 4, we have Raji and Bi'r Ma'una, and after Banu Nadir, I don't think we get time to to complete. Any questions?
You know, right at the very beginning when we started the discourse for today, the Sariya or Zayd ibn Haritha, was he actually taking a caravan himself that was captured by the Kufar, or was it the Kufar caravan that he had?
No, it was Kufar's caravan. Kufar's caravan led by Abu Sufyan, and they were going from the roots of Iraqi roots. And Prophet actually sent them in retaliation to what they did in Ghazwat al-Sawiq, and they confiscated whatever was there. Any other question?
What happened to the booty? The Uhud what happened to the booty?
The booties were taken by Kufar. Yeah, of course. Everything was taken by Kufar, because they were then defeated in the same place, so they had to retreat. Yes. There are many battles mentioned in the Quran, but what I wanted to discuss tonight was Banu Nadir as well, which of course we didn't get time. The Banu Nadir, the Jewish tribe, who actually after Uhud they were emboldened as well, and they wanted to do something against the Prophet. They broke the pledge that they had with the Prophet, and therefore the Prophet fought them. In Surah Al-Hashr, you can see the story of that battle of Banu Nadir. Okay, yes.
We saw that after the battle of Uhud, the Prophet had an attitude of mercy towards the Muslims. He said, "My Lord, have mercy on my people."
God guide them since the day
you know. How do you reconcile this with the attitude of the Muslims that the Prophet had at the same time?
Well, I mean, you can imagine. Of course, at that time he had not come to see the mutilated bodies. When he came and saw those bodies, it was really, really gruesome. And Prophet thought that I have to take revenge because of what they have done to our dead. Of course, being killed in a battle or killing people in a battle, it wouldn't outrage people very much because it's fight. But after the battle, when the dead bodies are there, you come and cut their nose and their ears. This is something very gruesome, of course. Yes, sir.
Is there any books that you would recommend for us to continue our reading on the life of the Prophet that you actually recommend? Have you seen the one that was published last week?
Yeah, Karen Armstrong is very good. Karen Armstrong is a very good one, and probably the best one written in plain English language. Of course, Ibn Hisham is translated, but it's a very difficult, complicated, because there are always names there, poetry, and all these things. But Karen Armstrong is very good. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. And for those of you who want to take the exam, good luck.